Okay. She said, I'm sorry, you said Marilyn will be here part of the time?
That's what she said, that she would probably spend a short time on the call.
Okay.
Hi, this is Steve Metallic joining.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Glenn.
So I got, as you said, Tony Harris, Mark Schneider, Jordan, myself, Steve, and who else?
Thomas Schussler.
Ah, Thomas. Sorry, Thomas. Someone just joined.
Yes, hi, it's Maggie Mansarkia.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Maggie.
Guys, while we're waiting, I will. Tuesdays are just the worst days for me, so I apologize. I will have to jump off early, but I will be on for a while.
Okay. And I remember Tom Keller saying he was not able to be on.
That's quite right. He is away. Yes.
Have we heard anything from Paul Stahar?
No, I haven't had any message from him.
All right, we'll wait a couple minutes.
Yeah, at this point we only have two constituencies in the ALAC here.
We have ISPs, the non-com. You're technically the registrars, but then we have IP. Yeah.
Oh, you're right. I actually didn't write down Steve. You're right. Steve.
How could you forget about Steve?
Sorry, Steve.
I won't take it personally. I was on mute. That's why you forgot about it.
Nicholas Ogren just joined.
Okay.
Hello, Nicholas. So, in fact, we're probably missing just the business constituency.
Well, I don't. It's kind of weird because I don't, even though I'm a registry, I don't represent the registries on these calls, and Jordan doesn't really represent the registrars on this call.
Okay, so we're waiting for David Maher and Paul Stahura.
Yeah, we'll give them a couple more seconds.
David Maher joining.
Excellent.
There you go.
What we may do just to avoid wasting everyone's time is we wanted to have a brief review of the highlights and action items from the last call just to encourage some further conversation on the list, because I think, as Thomas pointed out this morning, there hasn't been a lot of dialogue so far, although there was a little spurt of it today. But we do want to encourage some additional dialogue on the list. Obviously, if we're not going to visit a topic for several weeks, then it's important that it doesn't sort of linger while we're doing calls on other topics. So, just as a Jeff, you were going to go back through your notes. Did you want to recap the items from the last call?
Sure. And in going through also Glenn's notes, which were pretty good, I think last time we had a discussion, obviously the topic was on conspicuous notice, which was a recommendation of the Task Force 2. And initially we started the call with, I believe it was Steve that kind of recapped the requirements in the current registrar, I believe it's the accreditation agreement, which requires that registrars go out and get the consent of each of the registrants to use the data in, you know, whatever, however they're going to use it. And, of course, one of the ways is for display of who is information. Currently, that's one of the requirements. So then we entered into a discussion of, well, what is, and the term conspicuous notice kept coming up. how to provide notice to the registrant so that the registrant is actually made aware of what it is it's consenting to. And so we had a good discussion on a number of different ways to measure what conspicuous notice is, or to seek, not necessarily ways to measure it, but different types of conspicuous notice, in that, you know, there is on the one hand, there's a legal definition of conspicuous notice, but then, as Paul Sahara and others pointed out, well, it may be useful to get kind of a usability study, because even what may be in the paper world as conspicuous notice may not work in terms of, and as I saw in Mark's note since, may not work necessarily in the HTML world. So we got into a discussion of that. And then we got into a discussion of what things, you know, kind of ideas that people had about what could constitute conspicuous notice on, or a good method of notice on websites, and ideas such as like a checkbox, or, you know, Paul Sahara had mentioned something about in the Whois policy, or the Whois display itself, putting notice of what information is being displayed and why. Other people talked about that merely having a link to a separate pop-up page wasn't enough. They believe that wasn't, you know, although a lot of registrars use that now, that's not really enough to provide adequate notice to registrants of how their information is going to be used. And then, of course, there's the issue that we still need to explore, is once you decide how it's displayed, you got to decide what exactly is displayed. And so you need some sort of text as to whatever the policy is going to be. Unfortunately, I believe at that point the call had ended rather abruptly because of just some sort of administrative mix-up, and we kept getting these announcements that the call was going to end. So I believe that's kind of a recap of where we are, and I think Thomas had just submitted to the list a pretty good note of some concrete steps or a concrete recommendation as to the ways we can move forward. So that pretty much recaps the last call. Did I miss anything?
This is Barbara. I just joined the call.
Thanks, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. I think that sounds like a good recap, Jeff. So once again, we do want to continue to explore the ideas to, in terms of how to deal with improving the quality of notice and consent to for registrants. And so, I would encourage everyone to continue to engage in some of the dialogue that we've had on the list today, and hopefully it will be a little broader. But basically, we've got enough topics at this point that if we aren't conducting a lot of dialogue on the list, not only will we be, as Milton points out, perhaps excluding some people, but we'll also probably be a lot less productive as a group. And I think we're actually getting some pretty good suggestions on some of these topics, so we really have to be able to work them fairly well on the list with periodic calls to sort of catch up. So with that in mind, I think it makes sense to move on to our topic for this week, which is the national law and what to do when ICANN's Whois requirements conflicts with some regulations that or laws that may exist within a registrar's or registry's local jurisdiction. Steve, I think, well, actually, just to step back briefly, historically, for those of you that weren't involved, Task Force 2 actually had approved some a set of draft recommendations relating to this that were designed to sort of create the outlines for a procedure that might be used to deal with these situations. And I will, if you'll bear with me for 1 second, just recap those briefly. Oops, I've just lost my placeholder, though. One moment. Okay. So these, I'm not going to read the whole recommendation because it's fairly long, but the idea is that if a registrar or registry becomes aware that there who is putting data or displaying data and who is somehow violating a local or national law, then the that registry or registrar provides it would provide ICANN with notice of the conflict, including the law or regulation that causes the conflict and which part of the WHOIS obligation is causing the problem, and then what steps would be taken to cure it. And then another important element of that, of the sort of procedure laid out, is that if data elements are removed from WHOIS as a result of sort of resolving this problem, that if possible, some sort of notice would be placed on WHOIS directing a requester to how they might obtain that information. Then once ICANN had received this information, they would work with the registry or registrar essentially to see if they could resolve the conflict somehow, including notification by ICANN to the public of the change. And generally speaking, the idea is to resolve the conflict, you know, through some dialogue with ICANN, as happened in the case with the .name registry when they had some problems with the UK Data Authority. And there's also one specific exception made, you know, if the registry or registrar is basically demand is made that they immediately take action by the by a data commissioner or other local government entity, then they would be able to take that action, assuming that they notified ICANN in advance. But then they would still probably have to enter the consultative process with ICANN to sort of work out, you know, how to reconcile whatever action they've taken with their ICANN obligations. So that's, I think, a brief summary of the language that we put together in Task Force 2. Steve had posted, I think, to the list today some further thoughts on this, and I'm going to turn the floor over to him to maybe summarize what he views as sort of, you know, just to recap those thoughts, maybe.
Thank you, Jordan. Actually, all I posted was the recommendation from Task Force 2 that you've just walked through, and I think that's a good starting point. As you pointed out, we had some discussion about this in Task Force 2, and this was an outcome that everyone was comfortable with, at least as far as a preliminary report. And I think what we want to do is come up with a procedure, not trying to get into the substance of what these conflicts might be, but when it appears or when the registrar thinks that they have entered this conflict zone, you know, what should they do? And I think the first thing they should do is notify ICANN and try to see if we can work out the problem amongst all the interested parties.
Okay, great. So let me just start off by seeing if people, maybe especially those that were not involved with Task Force 2, have any initial reactions to those recommendations, and then maybe we'll move to a slightly more focused dialogue about, you know, what improvements we might make to the recommendations. Does anyone? Okay, great. Everyone's happy with it. So, in terms of next steps, I guess we have about a page and a half worth of detail already in Task Force 2. So the question is, you know, what are the additional steps that we could take? You know, those could range anywhere from just putting some requirements around the procedure in order to guide maybe an implementation team, or, you know, could be to put together some sort of flowcharts of what the procedure might look like. Really more or less involved, depending on, you know, the comfort level of the task force in terms of what they think is going to be most productive in making this a reality. So we'll be glad to open this up to thoughts from anyone on what they think some reasonable next steps might be on this.
Jordan, this is Steve. I think one group that would be involved in implementing this that is not formally weighed in, at least, is the ICANN staff, because this contemplates that the registrar would bring something to the staff, and then other things would, you know, this consultation would then happen. So I guess one question is how to bring the ICANN staff, the right people from the ICANN staff, into the discussion, or I mean, it probably makes sense to do that, you know, earlier rather than later, in case they see any problems with this approach. Because I think if they, that seems to me to be the main implementation issue that hasn't really been addressed in this recommendation.
Yeah, this is Barbara. The suggestion that I have for that is that if we could outline what we think the process would look like with steps, then it's something that I can coordinate with the general counsel's office to see if it, you know, if they see any overt issues in how staff would participate with that. I mean, how staff would fulfill that process. It's kind of hard to just go to them with a vague, you know, well, they're talking about doing this. And you know, it actually works much better once we're at the stage. As an example, on the draft of the new registry services, once we had a fully blown draft, I could take that to Dan Halloran and John Jeffrey and say, okay, here are the steps they're proposing. Here's, you know, the language they're using about each step. What in here is problematic? And it's a little bit later in the process than we might be comfortable, but it kind of requires that concreteness to get their involvement.
Okay, great.
This is Steve. I'd be glad to try to recast this in terms of steps in the format that I think Barbara's talking about.
Yeah, sure. So that's one possible approach is to sort of take this, you know, these sort of the high level recommendations and try to now make something of a formal step by step, maybe not informal, but more
formalized, I think, is
more defined, I guess.
Something structured, yeah.
Yeah, structured, yeah. Step by step process. I guess the other question is, you know, does that sort of process? Well, let me ask this, Barbara. I haven't been following it closely enough, but the registry services process, was the ICANN staff there reacting to something that came out of the policy level framework, or was that more in sort of an implementation phase that the staff got involved?
It's a little bit of both. I think that we were. What happened there was that I had tried to raise. I had tried to have discussions with the general counsel's office while the task force was working on the issue and saying, okay, well, they're discussing doing this, and how do we want to, you know, say something about that or whatever. And some of it had to do with, you know, specific implementation, like who consults whom and, you know, what kind of, you know, time does it take to do a certain thing. But some of it had to do with this, you know, the overall process, like, is it right to do this step before this other step? What are the complications if we if we go public with something before, you know, a registry has decided that that's what they want to do? You know, so that there was a lot of figuring out where the proprietary information stayed and where, you know, we involved the public in the process. And it was very hard to have those conversations without having an actual concrete plan in front of them to look at.
Sure.
And so that's where we got much further along in the work on that task force than we were probably comfortable with without the input of general counsel. And it just had to do with the fact of not having a specific proposal for them to make comments on.
Right. Okay. So it seems to me that there's two things that we really strike me as being productive to work on. Number one is to look at the sort of general recommendations we have and see if there's any, if they suggest specific requirements that might be necessary as part of this process. And I think we've already identified some of them. And then the other element of it is possibly putting together, maybe in addition to STEP, Steve, actually some sort of, you know, process like high-level flowchart or something like that, because there will be contingencies of, you know, what happens if X doesn't take place or something like that. That might be a productive way for us to work as well.
Sure. That's kind of just a graphic representation of steps.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess the difference would be you also have the ability to sort of branch off, which,
yeah,
you know, steps seem more sort of one-directional.
Okay.
I have a question when I can speak. Tony Harris here.
Yeah, Tony, anyone else want to speak? Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I just, out of curiosity, I tried something on the web. I went into register.com, and I looked up nba.com, and got all the information on nba.com, a full display of all the contacts and data. And I was told that this belonged to register.com's Wiz database. In other words, it's there. Information. I then tried the same search in Nominalia. Nominalia is in Spain, as you know. And when I went, when I asked for the information on NBA.com, the first report just told me it was occupied. But I had the option for more information, which I asked for, and they just patched me through to register.com's database again. I got the same page. My question to Steve, as a lawyer, is: if you're a registrar in Spain, and you're giving access to information which is in register.com, which I think is in the United States, how does that affect the registrar in Spain? I mean, what infringement is he committing there? If there is a local privacy law.
Well, I would not begin to answer that question because I think that illustrates how complicated some of these issues can be. What we're talking about here is a procedure. If the Spanish registrar comes to believe that it is perhaps exposed to some liability for doing this, then what's the procedure that it should follow to try to resolve the problem? I don't know whether that's a realistic fear or not. It really would depend on not only what the Spanish law is, but which law is applicable. And there may be laws of more than one country that's applicable. But that's precisely the type of situation that I think could plug into this procedure, and it would give a path, if they want to take it, for trying to resolve the problem.
Well, how different would it be if somebody in Spain went into a portal which resides in Spain and looks up a business directory which resides in the U.S., for example? I mean, or a Yellow Pages directory, which is online. I mean, he doesn't have the information residing in his server in Spain.
Well,
all he's doing is pointing at it, right?
In that circumstance, there's no exposure to a registrar at all. That's all that we're really talking about.
Okay, it's just a thought. I was curious as to the implications of this.
Tony, I think the real reason why this becomes problematic, I guess, is in the circumstances you're talking about, the portal or whoever, has the option to just sort of turn off, you know, if the Spanish authorities come and say, you know, you're accessing a directory that, you know, is problematic for privacy reasons, why don't you turn access to that off? You know, maybe there's some business detriment to them doing so, but they can always go ahead and comply. Whereas registrars and registries actually have obligations in their agreements with ICANN to publish the WHOIS data. So if the Spanish authorities were to come to Nominalia and say, hey, Nominalia, don't publish any, you know, WHOIS information anymore, then Nominalia's choice would be either to, you know, violate their ICANN contract or to comply with the authorities. Presumably, most of the time, they would comply with the authorities as opposed to their ICANN contract, but we want to have some mechanism in place for them to have dialogue with ICANN about the best way to resolve conflicts like that, because there is an affirmative obligation for registrars and registries right now to publish information that may be considered sensitive in some jurisdictions.
So, actually, I'm just confirming this because I don't. I read the contract a long time ago. If you're a registrar, then you do have to publish the information on your customers.
Yeah, that's correct. Wherever,
no matter what country you're in, that's correct, right?
Right, for GTLDs, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, any other thoughts or comments on this topic generally? So let me ask this. Are people happy with, to the extent that we've laid out the procedure in Task Force 2 already, seems like everyone seems reasonably content with that as a starting point for a procedure. Am I getting that right, or are people just silent because they don't care or because they are afraid to express their views?
Hey, Jordan, this is Jeff. I'm comfortable with the one-sided, it's like a one-sided procedure, right? It's got the registrar going to ICANN, but then it's kind of a little bit of a void, and I know Barbara was addressing it a little bit. You need to know, and Steve had raised this point earlier, we need to know not only what ICANN will do procedurally, but need to get some idea of substantively what ICANN will do. I mean, what ICANN has done in the past, is pretty much shut out the registrars and say, well, I'm sorry, this is just a requirement, you need to do it. If that's ICANN's position, and I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, if that's going to be ICANN's position, then having a procedure doesn't really change anything. I mean, there's no sense having a procedure if that's going to be the outcome every time. So, in essence, in order to define the procedure, you need to know kind of what the attitude is on ICANN's perspective.
I have another question when I may, Tony Harris.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
To somebody on the call who's familiar with the inroads of the registrar business, is there any significant advantage if you're a registrar in having your own WHOIS information online, or could you live just as happily if that was lodged somewhere else, say in the registry, for example?
Well, actually, with other than CommonNet, the registry, the information actually is lodged with the registry now. So that's the thin versus thick registry model sort of issue, where in CommonNet, the registrar publishes all the information themselves in biz, info, org, name, museum, arrow. Am I missing any? Co-op. It's all published at the registry level.
Yeah, the registry has it, but my point is, why would the registrar want to have his own customers listed on his website? I mean, why doesn't he just leave them in the registry and that's it?
Oh, you mean, are you asking why is WHOIS published at all?
No. Why would it be published at the registrar level?
Well, I think the answer is registrars would rather not publish anything at all.
Well, wouldn't that solve part of the problem?
Well, but they wouldn't want the registry to do it either. They don't want the... I think the opinion is, and I wish we had some registrars, I guess Jordan's on here, but the opinion is that they don't want the information displayed, period. Whether it's by them or by the registry, they just don't want it displayed. Because their customer, according to them, is their customer information. So even putting the burden on the registry wouldn't address their concern.
Yeah, but Tony, to really answer your question, why is it published? Why do registrars publish in like for CommonNet today? It's just a historical relic. When the shared registry system started in '99, VeriSign didn't want to deal with all that, you know, icky WHOIS information in the registry, and so we ended up with a thin registry where the registrars were each responsible for publishing their own WHOIS information, and over time, there's been a shift in sort of how what's been deemed to be sort of optimal. And so all the new registries contain that information, but there's been no opportunity to sort of migrate CommonNet at this point.
Okay. Thanks. That's very interesting.
Sure. So, Jeff, I think you do raise an important point, which is that we haven't addressed in Task Force 2's document. I'm just looking through it to make sure that there is no such guidance about what ICANN might actually do, but I think you're right.
Jordan, can I respond to Jeff?
Sure. Steve, go ahead, and then anyone else want to speak to this? Okay, Steve.
at one level, I don't think we should be getting into substance because each case is going to be different, obviously, and there's no way to anticipate. But I think the goal, if you're asking what should their goal be, their goal should be to try to resolve the problem in a way that the registrar doesn't face this, the Hobson's choice that you were talking about before. It should comply with local law and, to the greatest extent possible, preserve, fulfill its obligations under the contract. Now, that may not be possible in every case, but that, I would think, would be the goal. Otherwise, the goal would be, the only other path that I can see ICANN taking would be to say, you have to conform to the contract no matter what, and therefore you can't be a registrar anymore if you feel you can't live up to the contract. You will lose your accreditation. I don't think that's the position that they should take. And I guess they could also say, well, who cares about the contract? Do whatever you want if you think that there's some legal issue. And I don't think we want to see that outcome either. So the goal, it seems to me, would be to try to preserve both to the extent possible. I don't know if that's helpful, but I don't think that you can get much more specific than that because you don't know what the particular issue is going to be.
Well, I agree with that. To respond, we can't really get that specific unless, it's generally going to be ICANN's reaction that the answer is you have a contract and you've got to adhere to it, and that's the answer across the board. If there is any, if the goal is to see what the bounds are and why ICANN is making the decisions that it's making with respect to refusing registrar's approval or refusing to allow registrars to withhold data, then so I agree with you that we can't really address substance unless the substance is that it'll never be approved, because then I'm not sure what good a process is.
Well, but you could change the agreement, right? The ICANN accreditation agreement could be altered.
If you have such,
because I mean, when they wrote it originally, probably privacy was not such a big issue.
Right. Well, we'd have to see how receptive ICANN would be to doing something like that as well.
Well, if it's a reality out there, I mean, you got to look at it, right?
Yeah, and I think as we get into the discussion of like tiered access, this task force will be investigating topics like, whether or not the accreditation agreement ought to be changed somehow in order to change the way information's published. But ICANN's probably, philosophically, the registrar agreement ought to all, sort of be the same for all registrars. So it probably wouldn't be an outcome that on a one-off basis ICANN would change an individual registrar's agreement. I wouldn't.
Well, what
imagine
what the Task Force 2 recommendation says is that once this, at the end of the process, ICANN would tell the public what if there's anything in the agreement that it will not seek to enforce. Reasons for ICANN's forbearance from enforcement of full compliance with the contractual provision in question. So it clearly contemplates that might be the outcome in some cases. Now, that's a little theoretical in the sense that I would say today the entire contract could be described as parts of the contract from which ICANN does not forbears from enforcement. But hopefully, at some point, we'll see a situation where ICANN does enforce these contracts, and therefore it should be able to say, well, we're not going to enforce this particular provision because of this particular situation. That seems to me to be the way to resolve this in general, if no other resolution can be reached.
Right. So I think really we have two issues that Jeff identified, and one of them I think is, or at least we can split it into two issues. One is that I think is true that the current Task Force 2 recommendations don't address any sort of procedure or process that ICANN might use internally once it receives a request from a registrar. Other than, it does say that they will notify the public and changes will be archived on the public website, but there's no discussion of what sort of process might be used by ICANN once the dialogue begins. and we could have a discussion about whether or not we think it's valuable to add that to the recommendations. And then number two, I guess, there is some, once again, the second issue that is separate from the first issue is whether or not the task force ought to provide any guidance to ICANN as to an approach that might be, or a substantive resolution of the issues that are raised. That seems obvious, a little bit more complicated, but maybe there's sort of broad philosophical points that we could introduce in order to help that process along and provide some guidance. But the second one seems a little bit more complicated than the first one, which is just sort of outlining a procedure similar to what's used in the registry services, similar from a very high level, not similar from actually adopting that sort of process necessarily, but that there is a process that exists once a registry contacts ICANN with a request. So I guess that raises two questions. Number one is, does the task force believe that we ought to also make an effort to specify or describe the process that ICANN might use once a registrar or registry has contacted it with a request or with an instance in which there's a conflict between local law and the ICANN contract? I know Jeff thinks the answer to that's yes. Does anyone else have an opinion on this?
Yeah, thanks, Jordan.
Well, this might be part of what we would ask the ICANN staff to react to once we give them this flow chart, is to say, how would this work? I don't know that we necessarily need to specify how they would handle it. Are you talking about what person would do it, or...
No, I think ICANN receives a note from a registrar saying, hello, ICANN, we have our national privacy regulator came to us and told us that we can't publish phone numbers in the Whois database anymore. What should we do? And we right now our procedure basically says ICANN will work with the registrar. So the question is, do we blow that box out into some further detail? Like, does ICANN need to consult the public? Does ICANN need to...
Well, like a basic question would be, how does ICANN verify that the information given is correct?
Sure.
I mean, how do they make sure that it's coming from a registrar?
How do they make sure that what the registrar is telling them is accurate? And I'm not saying people are going to dissemble. I'm just saying that they need to verify it. They need to make sure that the information is accurate.
Right. Well, I mean, one way you could deal with that is to specify that what the registrar needs to send to ICANN. For example, when you say it's accurate, you're saying, does the law really say what they say it says?
And did they receive the notice that they said they received? Right. And,
I mean, there are ways you could build that into what should be in what's submitted to ICANN.
Right, and I think that's the kind of clarity that would be required for General Counsel's office to review this. Like, what is it that's actually going to happen?
Right, so I think that... Okay. That we may, just thinking about this for a second, so it may just be that we take the existing policy, it sounds like from this, we may take the existing Task Force 2 recommendations and add some, whatever additional level of requirement and specification is necessary to make them clear, I suppose. I think perhaps just the suggestion, it seems, I'm hearing from the lack of hearing that maybe a good starting point for this is to just go back and turn the existing sort of policy outline that Task Force 2 put together into some more concrete steps and or process flowchart that then could be reviewed by the task force and maybe then passed on to the ICANN staff for review to see if there's sufficient detail there for it to be useful to them. Does that seem like a reasonable next step?
I think it does.
Okay, so now we just need some volunteers to actually do that.
Well, this is Steve. I'll volunteer to participate in that.
Okay. Anyone else want to be involved with that process? Are we going to make poor Steve do it all by himself?
Well, I think everyone will be involved in it because I'll circulate to the list. So.
Yeah, so I guess that it sounds like if you're willing to do so, it would be most
I'll
useful.
I'll take the first step. Anyway.
Yeah, take the first draft and circulate that to the list, and then we'll see what discussion erupts.
Thomas here, if I may make an educated guess, I would presume that Thomas Keller may be interested in working on the first draft, too. He's not on the call today, but I think this is one of his main issues.
Yeah, well, I'll drop Thomas a note and just tell him that Steve's going to be working on it, and if he'd like to chat with Steve about it, then he can. Is that okay with you, Steve?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, great. So other than this, are there other... does anyone else see any other additional work that is required to make these national law recommendations a reality and a useful tool for registries and registrars? No? Okay, great. Well, this call is turning out to be not very contentious and fairly straightforward. If that's it, then I really don't have anything else to cover on the on today's call. I don't want to drag it out, so we'll probably just leave it at that with Steve circulating a draft of the sort of more concrete version of the Task Force 2 recommendations on this, and we'll have a discussion on list. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Next week is the beginning of the tiered access, and Jordan, you and I should probably talk, and we'll try to come up. It's a huge topic, so we'll probably try to come up with a structured way of trying to deal with this.
I thought the focus was going to be on the question of methods of identifying or authenticating who is requesters.
Correct.
Threshold issue.
I think that is a great starting point. So we probably will start there, Steve.
Okay.
Right. But still, that's pretty broad. So we'll
hopefully
try to come up with a good structured way to address that.
Yeah, I would suspect next week's call will be longer than this one.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back next week at the same time.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.